Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Everyone to Aggressive Negotiations, your place to kick back, talk about Star Wars in the way that you always wanted to with your friends. And I am one of the Jedi Masters here, Matthew Rushing, and of course with me, as he is every single week. I mean, I just, one, it would be a boring show if it was just me. So we bring in the true master, the one, the only, the myth, the legend, John Mills.
That's one hell of an intro. Matt,
I don't know, you got to live up to it. So,
well, the thing is, I don't really, because what everybody in the audience knows that you don't is you are recording this alone. Everything that you hear right now isn't being said. I am, in fact, not here. This is all just you.
Oh, wow. I'm a better ventriloquist than I thought.
Yes.
Goodness.
I do have to question your choice of puppets. I don't like the fact that you chose the Hannibal Lecter puppet for me. So we'll have to work on that.
Sorry. That's all I had available. The other puppets were busy. Anyway, okay. So, John, I had a question for you because I was thinking about this the other day. Obviously, we just hit summer today. We're recording on the very first day of summer.
Yes.
And it's bloody hot in a lot of places in the States right now and around the world because it's summer for a lot of people. And so it got me to thinking, what would be some of the places that you'd like to live in the Star Wars universe? I thought it would be fun to kind of talk about that. You know, we visit all these amazing planets. Some of them we get to spend a lot of time on. Some of them we don't get to spend any time on other than to, like, just kind of see them in a hologram or whatever. But let's just say, if right now, if you had to pick the one and only planet that you could live on in Star Wars, and then we'll maybe choose some others, but obviously, because this would be a really boring show if we only talked about one. But what's the one that comes to your mind and I would live on this planet?
Okay. My first question is going to be this is, are we restricting ourselves to the films, episodes 1-7, or are we expanding to include the Clone Wars cartoon?
I say all of the above, because
everything is fair. Wow. Okay.
Everything is fair game. I would say let's keep it in canonical, you know, so it's Clone Wars, the films. If you've seen in a comic book a planet that you liked that's, you know, now canon, oh God, we should talk about that one day. Anyway, what planet do you think comes to mind?
Wow. Okay. Well, my number one choice, I don't think that this would surprise really anybody that has known me for any amount of time, but it would wind up being Naboo. Because I am a fan of architecture to begin with, and the fact that it is both of the dominant races on Naboo have beautiful architecture would be something that I would love to live in a place like that, because we're left with the impression. Granted, you could sit there and you could say, oh well, it's a big planet. We only saw Theed and we saw Odo Gunga and we didn't, you know, we saw the swamps and everything, but we didn't necessarily see any down and out parts. But I definitely think that the vibe that's communicated is this is a planet where the dominant cultures as a rule are dedicated to beautiful art and architecture. And it's like, how could you not want to live in a place like that? I mean, from my point of view, how could you not want to live in a place like that? Because it's gorgeous and they got the waterfalls and all of that stuff. So for me, that's my number one choice. I'd be interested to hear what yours is.
It was a hard call because I'm with you, and I would completely agree. You know, on my list as well is Naboo as a place that I would want to live and or visit in the Star Wars. It's gorgeous. And I mean, you know, especially in episode 2 where they go to the Lake Country, and really it's just Italy and the Lake Country there. So,
yeah.
you know, and as gorgeous as I know Italy is, I have a huge love for everything that you talked about with Naboo. I agree with you. I love the architecture. I just love everything about the place. It's incredible. It feels like it's not a very humid place unless you're maybe in the swamplands, but otherwise it seems like it's a pretty temperate climate. But to me, the place that I think I would want to live the most is Alderaan.
Alderaan, really?
And you remember in episode 3, you get the brief glimpse, you know, when the ship lands and, mm-hmm. you know, Bail brings his wife the baby and the majestic. I mean, it looks like Austria or, you know, Bavaria or where in the Alps. That's what it reminds me of. And so it felt a little bit like Naboo, but with majestic Alp-like mountains. And to me, I love that kind of place anyway. I mean, I already live mm-hmm. in the Northwest, so, you know, it's one of my favorite things is mountains and beautiful rivers and lakes and alpine lakes and things. So to me, there's just something so gorgeous about that place because it seems like, you know, you could go swimming in a cold, clear lake or you could be skiing on one of the mountains, you know, there. It just – I felt like it – you know, they have an interesting sense of architecture, it seemed like, in their place.
Where the Tanavi goes to land, you're absolutely right. The thing is, it's beautiful architecture, but it's much more of a modern feel to it than Naboo. Naboo sort of calls back antiquity, whereas it's sort of like antiquity through a technological lens on Alderaan. So I see what you're saying with that. Sure, sure.
So for me, just that scene specifically from episode 3, and we do see it in the Clone Wars a little bit because they do visit Alderaan, but not a ton. I mean, it's relatively the same kind of setup, but it just seems like such a beautiful place. I would love to live there and, you know, just basically have, you know, a cabin in the woods there on Alderaan, you know, and lead people on hiking trips or something. It just seems like an incredibly peaceful place to live until it gets blown up.
Well, see, that's interesting too, because it's like, are we going, I'm not going to go down the road of like, you know, Alderaan is supposed to be, you know, this sort of like almost Gene Roddenberry-esque planet where it's like everybody gets along and nobody fights and everybody's all pacifist and everything. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I kind of like the idea that Naboo, I'd probably be the Naboo that's hanging out with the Gungans going through their grand army exercises because, you know, I mean, and, the, you know, the Gungan weapons are just cool to look at.
Got a grand army.
They do. And that's why you know liking them, Misa thinks.
Yeah, it probably actually is why I don't like them.
But see, what's interesting to me is you mentioned Alderaan and what would be on my list, but, you know, obviously not number one, would be Bespin. And what would kill Bespin for me is it looks beautiful, it looks great, but there's no green to it. There has to be green somewhere on it, I would think, because they got to have some sort of food supply unless they're importing everything, which seems like it would be really difficult for them to do. But like, for me, Bespin would be a great place to visit, but there's no way I could live there. And I also was thinking, because I was watching Empire Strikes Back with the kids recently, and one of the things that hit me was I was sitting there, and I was like, okay, so how high up is Bespin? Okay, you know, all right, so it's around that high, you know, like sort of working it out of my head. And then I think for a second, I go, man, the skin cancer rates there have got to be insane. Do you think that, like, Bespin has, like, a special shield over? Because, like, if you go to Denver, like, the solar radiation's much more. So if you're, like, floating up in the atmosphere, you know, like, do they have some sort of, like, special countermeasures on Bespin? Have we ever heard about that?
Great question. I was thinking the same thing about, like nobody would ever want to visit Mustafar. I mean, you know, I mean, because you would have to have, like, a liquid cooling suit to be there.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just like being in Texas in the summer. So,
yeah, like Mustafar is the one planet that you go to visit, and all the locals are like, "Take me with you, please.
Yes,
get me out of here."
I'll do anything. Just let me come with you. Right.
Do you need an indentured servant? Because if that's how I have to get on your ship, I'm good.
Whatever I have to do, I will do it.
All right. Yeah. Well, I mean, Mustafar is obvious pick for like a personal hell sort of place. So let's take Mustafar out of the equation. I'm interested. We're talking about places we would like to live. Where would be, and we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about those, but like, I instantly want to know what would be, excluding Mustafar, the worst possible place that you've seen on film for Star Wars where you would, you know, be stuck living.
I mean, we have all these desert planets, right? So, I mean, yeah. You've got Jakku and Tatooine.
Yep.
Like, who would want to live there?
Geonosis is a desert planet.
Geonosis doesn't look like a great place to live. I can imagine the humidity on Felucia is just awful. You know, I mean, it looks beautiful. I wouldn't mind visiting there, like, on a tropical vacation, you know, like an all-inclusive resort.
Yeah, but don't they have, like, skin-eating fungi that are, like, on the planet there and stuff like that? I know we don't see that in the film, but isn't Felucia also incredibly dangerous to walk around?
From non-canonical sources, Felucia is pretty dangerous in the Force Unleashed games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous place. Hey, Shaak Ti's alive there, at least for a while. So,
With a pet Sarlacc. How awesome is that?
would not mind visiting, you know, old Shaak Ti. So hanging out, I'm sure she serves, you know, great umbrella drinks by the river.
I think she's missed a complete opportunity, actually, because it sounds like she's got a rapper's name. So like Shaak Ti could go on tour with Ice-T and just absolutely tear up the Outer Rim circuit. But that's just me.
50 credit. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I love it.
I like that, 50 credit. but, you know, for me, Umbara, because if we're going to include the Clone Wars series, Umbara would be a personal hell. A place that's like permanently dark, no sunlight. That's true. That would be
awful.
That
is an awful place to live, yeah. And the things that are alive on there, they like have, you know, mini Sarlaccs there.
Yeah.
That are trying to eat you. That's not a planet that I would want to visit. Now a planet that I think would be cool if you wanted to go on a winter vacation would be Megiddo. Unfortunately, Kai Adimundi dies there, but it seems like it's the kind of place where it's an urban planet that's also got a lot of cold. So I'm sure that a lot of snow sports happen there. Anytime they need the Galactic Olympics for the winter, it's probably one of the planets that is always in contention along with Hoth. So
I don't know, ice planets. I love me some winter, and I like change of seasons, but I couldn't live anywhere that would be.
I'd go on vacation there. I didn't say there.
I thought you were implying that you and Kai Adimundi would strap on your
snowshoes and go for a hike. Right. Yeah, no,
go wampa hunting.
Sounds good to me. He's a great hunter too. He has extrasensory, you know, nodes in his head. He's fantastic.
Oh, see, I thought he was just a reject from a Saturday Night Live skit, but okay. sorry, easy joke. I know, I had to go for it. But, you know, I would be interested for your take on Coruscant, because Coruscant makes it to my list of personal hell. Mm-hmm. Which list of your, would it make it on your top 10 list of places to live, or would it make it to your personal hell list?
It would be somewhere in between. I think that's a visit. It's like New York City. You know, I'm not sure if I want to visit, live there, but hey, going there to see a Broadway play, their Broadway is huge. It's like half the, you know, a planet.
Yeah, right.
So yeah. They have a lot of theaters. but no, I think that would be really cool. I mean, it'd be an incredible place to visit. I mean, it's not like I want to go to, you know, level 1313 or something.
Non-canonical. Oh wait, no, 1313.
No,
did get a shout out.
Clone Wars made that stuff canonical. So
yeah, it's just the game that got killed.
That's so sad.
It is so sad because anyway.
You know, it's hard to think of other places that I'd want to live. But I think if there was one place I'm thinking, okay, I would live here. I love Endor. I think it's a gorgeous place. You know, and obviously, I can't imagine that the entire planet is nothing but like redwood type trees. There's got to be something else there, but it just seems like a gorgeous, peaceful place to live again. you know.
It is the sanctuary moon. So, you know.
And
it's right there in the name.
As long as you're friendly enough, Ewoks aren't that bad. You know, you could probably get some to help you clean the house every once in a while. And
But back it up for me. Are we regarding the Ewok movies from the 1980s as canonical? Because as I recall, there are some unpleasant things that live on Endor, if those are counted in our... I mean, if anybody in the audience is listening that's too young to remember the Ewok adventure or the Ewok battle for Endor, they were two TV movies that aired, I think it was ABC, back in the 1980s, that, they have their own... their own special place in the pantheon of terrible Star Wars television missteps. So I just want to know, like, the Endor that you're picturing, does it have Yuuzhan and other creatures that are going to try to eat you there?
I'm saying that the Endor I'm picturing just comes from Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm imagining an amazing treehouse that I live in. So...
see, I got to think about
heights. In fact, have you
ever
seen the show Treehouse Masters and the treehouse those guys build? It's just incredible. Mm. Like, we're talking about, like, actual homes and trees. And, I mean, gosh, who couldn't build an amazing home in a tree that size?
Yeah, see, the thing is, I got to think about heights, and those railings don't exactly look up to code. So I'd be very nervous the whole time I was on Endor.
Well, I would definitely make sure that thing was up to at least Ewok code, if not, you know, Republic level code, because, you know, I don't want anybody dying when they come to visit me, you know, getting a little bit too tipsy and falling over the railing.
Well, that's... I mean, you know, overregulation would actually kill your visit to Endor. You have to be free to sort of, like, navigate through your own safety rules. I agree with you.
Who wants to argue with an Ewok about, you know, height regulations? So... I don't.
Right. That's got to be a delicate conversation. No, the railing's not
high
enough.
I just keep getting, you know, accused of being, you know, heightist. So.
Right. Yeah. You know, though, that actually, okay, this is sort of a rabbit hole thought, but it is a thought. Post Return of the Jedi, I mean, I know we're going to find out as the books keep coming out. You know, at the time we're recording this, they still haven't released Aftermath 2, the Aftermathening. And my big question, though, would be, okay, Endor plays a big crucial role in the downfall of the Empire. Is there some sort of tourist industry that springs up post-Return of the Jedi where people go on sort of like, you know, war tours to go visit Endor and places like that? Like, go see where, you know.
Like on Hoth and.
Right. No, they stop off. Yeah, they stop off at Tatooine to be like, this is the place where Luke Skywalker was born.
These were his aunt and uncle laid. Their remains are still in the dust.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh. You know, okay, now.
Sore subject.
No, the thing is, now you set me off on another tangent where I'm wondering if Luke buried the bodies or just left them there. That's really grim either way.
Yeah, it is.
I've never thought about that until now.
Yeah, I've never... maybe, you know, my thought process is that, you know, there's that cut scene, you know, where mm-hmm, they cut mm-hmm. from him to then being back at Obi-Wan. And it seems like he's been gone a while. I'm going to put in my headcanon that he buried them.
Okay. I can live with that. See, the thing is, I can live with it either way, where it would be too painful for him to do it. But I think that I prefer it, if I think about it, that Luke took the time, even if he didn't dig a grave, that he took the time to somehow cover up and pay respects to them, to sort of like close the door. And I know that this has nothing to do with whether I'd live on Tatooine, which the easy answer is no. But wow, these are the type of conversations we have. So
wait, you don't want to be a moisture farmer?
You know what? As glamorous as it seems... I mean, you do get a good helping of blue milk with every
that
meal.
It's very true. Yeah. That's very true. So is there anywhere else for you that kind of stands out in your mind next to Naboo and you're like, I would live here?
Something that would be in contention with Naboo. My gosh, that is actually a very tough call. Definitely not Cato Nymoidia. That would not make it. And I mean, I think Endor is a good choice to have up there. Oof, man. I think Alderaan I could go with. Like, I wouldn't be upset about living on Alderaan before it got blown up. I definitely wouldn't want to live with the Polis Mossens because,
yeah, that seems like asteroid. A very boring existence.
Yeah, you can't even go outside without a helmet on. Like, why? You know? I don't know. Kamino would be interesting, I think. It would
if
probably
you like humidity.
Be pretty tedious to be out there in the rain. But at the same time, one of the things that always takes my breath away every time I watch Attack of the Clones is the interiors, you know, of Tipica mm-hmm. City and everything. Like, it still takes my breath away because, like, even that is just, how could you be, you know, depressed with all of the rain and everything? Just stay inside. It's so bright and airy and roomy. And sure, you're doing really creepy experiments, cloning people and all of that. That's kind of disturbing. But at the same time, it's so, yeah, I mean, I really would have to divorce sort of the ethical questions that go along with living on Kamino, I guess.
Well, maybe you're just a local Kaminoan merchant. Maybe you own like a Kaminoan restaurant.
Oh, and I'm riding the water whale with
yeah,
wings.
Exactly. You just ride the water whale to work.
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. Like, we see the cloners. Maybe there is like a whole
other city.
Yeah, but I mean, like, somebody's got to be like cooking.
It's
food.
It's like a suburb,
stuff.
You know?
Right. Oh, I like that.
It's where they have their, like, you know, Kamino and Target and that kind of stuff.
Is there, like, a supplier of, you know, like, backup clone parts and stuff like that? Is it, like...
no, but I was thinking that, you know, they probably don't have, like, a Starbucks. It's probably more like Fish Bucks, and they probably like hot fish juice as
a drink.
Well,
wait a minute. Actually, somebody would have to be the one to manufacture... I know that this is probably... But somebody would have to work with, like, on trade with the other planets. So, like, Kamino, I could call home if I got to travel around other places where I would see sunlight every so often. I could go with Kamino.
Yeah, that was on a list of a place to visit, especially if you're, like, I would think a big fisherman. You know, I feel like there's got to be some crazy things in those waters. You know, that's where you go and catch your jaws. And so,
yeah, right.
Or is that, what was that guy... Rex Tamborn from the Mon Calamari episodes that they did, you know, it basically looked like a shark.
Yeah,
you catch him.
Yeah, okay. Oh, wow. Mon Cal's another water planet, but it's not as storm-tossed.
And a really cool one, too.
You know what? Mon Cal would beat Kamino because it's not constant rainfall on Mon Cal. So, yeah,
although
I could go for Mon Cal.
You do have to live underwater because... I mean, I don't know if I want to be in a helmet my entire life.
That'd be interesting to me, because would it really be difficult to live in the Star Wars galaxy, you know, someplace? Because I'm sitting here talking about Kamino, like there's no daylight and stuff like that. Like, you have to imagine the technology is good enough. And like, there are places in this world I'm never going to see, but thanks to the magic of television and the internet, you know, like that's got to alleviate a lot of the desire to leave home that exists on these rougher planets that we're talking about, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. No, there's got to be something. I mean, like, I just think of the cold weather planets, you know, where we actually do see people living there. You know, there's got to be something that makes them, like, worth a place to live for those people, like, other right. than just, you know, like, I think of the Talls from... Clone Wars episode, you know, where the Pantorans say that it's their planet, and they almost get into a big fight, and luckily Obi-Wan and Anakin and the senator from Pantor are able to avoid starting a whole nother war between those two civilizations. And the Thralls, you know, they've just lived there their entire life. For them, it's home, you know? So, and obviously, they are ready-made to live in that planet. They're really shaggy, furry beings. So, but for them, it's just... They probably just have 1,000 different words for snow.
You know, though, I mean, like, and as we talk about that, though, like, you would have to think that, like, it would be really interesting to sort of examine the idea that in the Star Wars galaxy, there are probably massive migration patterns. Because, I mean, if you had the ability to go to any planet, right, get passage anywhere, and you live on one of these, you know, single biome planets like Hoth, or, you know, I mean, you'd have to be a Wampa or a Tauntaun, but like, say you're a Talz and you're like, I'm sick of snow. You've got so many choices for where to go. And I mean, I guess that translates to, I mean, just this planet in and of itself, there are places you could go, you know, if you want to go live in a specific climate or escape one. But I think it would be really interesting if they had some sort of series that covered the idea of these massive migration patterns where there were certain planets where like they got emptied out over time. Because everybody was like, wait, there's something better to go to? I'm out, man. Like, why would the Kaminoans remain on Kamino? Because if I recall correctly, the official explanation for all of the water and the rainfall is that they melted their ice caps and it caused a geological disaster. And that's why they all lived indoors and that's why it rained all the time. So if you have the technology and your cloners and everything, is it simply that the Kaminoans saw an advantage to being on the outer rim like that, you know, beneath the Rishi Maze and everything? Or was there something cultural that tied them to it that they just couldn't? Like, is there some sort of cultural thing that keeps people on Tatooine or on Alderaan or on Kamino? Like, I just think it would be a fascinating series for somebody to do, even if it was just book form.
That is a great and interesting thought of like, you know, I think that's one of the things that about Star Wars, you know, when you start to push on it, things don't necessarily make logical sense because it's just the way it is. Like, you know, people right. just live on a water planet and that's where they live, you know. But, you know, I was thinking about this. You know, you mentioned Cato Nemoidia earlier, and I think that planet is fascinating. This idea really? That they live on these very strange, like, bridge-like cities.
Yeah.
And to me, that place just looks amazing. Like, I don't know to live there, but that's a place I would totally visit.
Now, just for anybody that's not as familiar with where Cato Nemoidia is, you do see it briefly in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And it's where Plo Koon gets
Plo
shot
Koon
down.
Plo Koon dies, yeah.
During Order 66. Don't pay close attention to the cockpit that he's in. Just ignore that part. Because it doesn't match the ship that he's flying, but that's okay. And it's these suspension bridges. And I agree with you that that's really interesting, but I think that would even speak in and of itself to this idea of, you know, if everything is so unpleasant that you have to live on suspension bridges to stay away from the things that are on the surface, you got other options.
It's kind of like, what in the heck happened to Mandalore? I mean, Mandalore would be an incredible place to visit because those cities that they live in, those dome cities, are incredible looking.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather live on Concord Dawn because, you know,
there's at least vegetation.
Yeah. It looks like one of those rugged planets again, you know, where it's more mountainous, you know, nice trees, that kind of stuff. So, like Mandalore, super cool. But what forces a whole civilization when you can fly away and find another planet to stay there?
You know, that's interesting, though, because now I think I'm pulling on a thread mentally where maybe that's just another visual cue that Lucas has sort of embedded throughout the first six Star Wars films, is that a lot of the quote unquote good guys are in environments that have removed them from, as you say, rugged, very natural places. But I mean, I guess the Nemoidians have as well. So I guess it's not a hard and fast rule, because I was just thinking that the balance of Concord Dawn versus Mandalore, and then you have Coruscant, and then you have, like, it seems almost as if the Separatists and the Rebels align themselves with more natural order planets than technological planets. And maybe that in and of itself is a cue as to how the Empire develops and the Republic falls. I don't know. I'm probably reaching for something, but I'm going to chew on that for a while.
One of the planets that I think would be a pretty cool place to live, and we see this in the Clone Wars, is Sereno. Sereno has a really, looks like a really cool planet. Planet where somebody as refined as Count Dooku is from.
Yeah,
it's got to be a great place to live. You know, I'm thinking that their restaurant selection is fabulous. They've got excellent tailoring, obviously, because look at those pajamas he wears.
Oh yeah, right. Well, those are nice pajamas, but at the same time, if there's this sort of, and I mean, Count Dooku very obviously comes from a hierarchical, royalty based tradition. There've got to be places on Sereno that are really rough, that are, you know, a lot less fortunate than the places where he would be living. And I'm also, it's interesting because some of the stuff that was considered canon, like there was a terrific book, I can't recall the name of it right now, where Yoda went to try to win Count Dooku back from the dark side. And it happened before Revenge of the Sith,
yeah.
And Wee was in it, who we do see very briefly in a holographic form in Revenge of the Sith. But there were conflicts with the way that the planets were described and portrayed on screen in the old, even considered canonical expanded universe. Like Caden Nymoidia also comes to mind, that there was a different topography in James Luceno's book, Labyrinth of Evil, than there was portrayed on film, which I think is very interesting. So there are definitely, I'm glad that we restricted it to stuff that is considered official only. Now, one last question before we bring things together is, do you, with the design of the planets, everything's very iconic, would you consider any of the places that Abrams introduced in Episode 7 to be in contention for a place to live?
Well, that's interesting because, Hosnian Prime, we just don't know much about it. We don't really get an opportunity to really see that planet, which is disappointing. You know, is it all city like Coruscant, or is it, you know, have major big cities kind of like Coruscant, but then like in the sense of like just massive cities, but then it's got part planet too? But the planet I liked the most, I think, is Takodana. That planet seemed like another one of those kind of rugged backwater planets that had a lot of natural beauty to it, plus getting to visit Maz's place wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, Maz's place is pretty cool. And I agree with you obviously I'm not going to live on Starkiller Base, because I actually was thinking the whole time we're having this conversation, it's like, you don't see any natural creatures there. And, for obvious reasons, I guess, but like, I hope that they cover at some point sort of the ecological devastation and stuff like that, because I don't think you ever see any creatures or any, I mean, you see the trees, but everything else is snow covered for obvious reasons on Starkiller Base. I think that would be an interesting history to go into, but I agree with you. Now with Takodana though, if we accept that even the little e-novellas that they released before the film are official, apparently they have really terrible equatorial storms on Takodana, don't they? Because when they go to Maz Kanata's castle, it's those storms are specifically mentioned. And I remember that was, I guess I considered it a head fake, because in the trailers for Episode 7, we had seen the shot from Rey's vision of the Knights of Ren standing in the rainfall. And I thought that was Takodana. I thought that was them coming to get them in that. I mean, it could still be in Episode 8 or 9, I guess, because, you know, maybe that's a piece of the future that she saw. Who knows? But I think we all agree that it was probably him killing all of the Jedi. But anyway,
I do have to say, so this planet has been like running around in my mind, and I'm like, where does it come from? Where is it? Finally remembered where it comes from, John. You remember the great Clone Wars episode where Ahsoka and Padme go to see her friend who works in the the separatist Senate.
Yeah, when they go for the separatist, they're yes. trying to have a negotiation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Raxus is the planet, and it's just a gorgeous planet. It reminds me a lot of Naboo, and yet it has its own features. It has really great architecture. It's a, you know, it's a pastoral world that is known for its beauty. And I remember thinking that the animation and the way that they portrayed this place, I would love to live there. It was just, it was gorgeous.
Yeah, I could be down with that. Yeah, absolutely. Toydaria, believe it or not, I might consider. Because that seems sort of like the Australia of the Star Wars galaxy.
That's true.
You know, there are parts
of it
that
are... They like to throw the shrimps on the Bobby down there.
You know? Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, there are parts of it that are brutal. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of beauty on that planet.
It reminds me of Utah.
Utah.
I don't know if you've ever driven through Utah at all.
I have
but
not.
It's a place of amazing beauty that also feels kind of desolate at the same time. And that's what that Toydaria reminds me of. It's like this place of incredible natural beauty of these amazing rock formations and that kind of stuff. But it's a little bit, it feels a little desolate. But there's a sense of awe and wonder to that. So, yeah, I could see that.
You know what? I would want to invite our listeners. If you guys have any Star Wars planets that you think you would want to live, you know, something that jumps out at you, something that, you know, what would your reason be? Matt, where can they go ahead and reach out to us?
They can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. They can also find us online at our website, thenerdparty.com. You can also catch up with us all over the place. We were also on Twitter, John. We've got The Jedi Masters. You can check us out, just specifically our show.
You can also join us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. Right, Matt?
Yeah, you can check us out there too, John.
You can indeed.
So a bunch of places you can find us all over the web. John, I know that you have a few different places that you like to sneak around on online. Where can people find you?
You know what, Matt? There are a couple of places they can find me, but I do want to make a quick shout out to say that if you've ever wanted to try Loot Crate, you can help the show, help the network by going to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, and you can get a discount on your new membership with Loot Crate. And if you're not familiar with Loot Crate, we invite you to go to the link. You can get all sorts of really interesting things tailor-made for the geek who loves collecting, and it is a very low price, monthly price, and you get a box of goodies sent to you every single month. And when you do that, you can reach out to me on Twitter and let me know. I'm at Kessel Junkie, and I'm on the Trek FM network over at Stage 9 with Mike Schindler, and I'm on Words with Nerds with my buddy Craig Sorrell. And Matt, where can people find you around on the internet?
Well, John, a few places you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the Trek FM network as well, doing a few shows. I'm with Chris Jones, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine on a show called The Orb. I'm also on a show with a few different guys. I've got Bruce Gibson and Dan Gunther, and we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek on a show called Literary Treks. We're also interviewing the authors there a lot of times about their newest work, so be sure to check that out. You can also find me on the General Geek Show there, the 602 Club, which is so much fun talking about a new geeky topic each week. We just recently did the second James Bond movie, as we're slowly working through, so check that out. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, you can find all of those shows on iTunes. John, you can also find our show on iTunes. And you know what I'd like to ask? We could really use some new reviews and ratings, because it's been a while since we've gotten to mention anybody on the show for a new star rating and review there on iTunes. So be sure, when you're over there on iTunes finding the show and subscribing, give us a star rating and review. You know why? Because we love you. We want to hear what you think about the show. And we want to mention you on the show, and we want to thank you. So just hit us up there. Any star rating and review will do, and we'll make sure that you get mentioned on the show.
Well, Matt, I think that it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.